You'll never believe it. It's another podcast. That's two in a month. No, sorry, today's 1st of May. No, nearly two in a month. Wow. I'm recording this on the night of the 1-1 draw against Rangers and Celtic Park, which all but secures the title for Celtic. We obviously need one more win, and one win and a draw for mathematical certainty, but obviously one win and we don't lose games by 10 goals per game. So I decided to go back to the start of the podcast era, and we've got two guests. We've got two guests from bygone days. I'll let them introduce themselves. This is me, Barry Brady. So I am joined now by two of the older hands of the Scottish footballing podcast world, one of whom I had to rack my brains because I couldn't actually remember his fictional name for the purposes of the podcast earlier on today. So I am joined by, from By The Min fame, Mr. Lawrence Donegan. How are you doing, Lawrence?
What do you mean, but you didn't know my name for
podcast? No, the other one. The other guy that's about to be on, I couldn't remember his real name. And I know I can't tell him by his real name.
Unless I'm sitting here waiting. Well, I'm obviously not getting the big introduction because I'm, but thanks very much.
Well, I'm going to do the introduction to you later.
Mm-hmm. All right. I can't remember his name either. Actually, do you know what? I can. And let me just say, right, back in about 2010, 2011, I'd be out running on Mount Tamil Pius, and many's a time I had to stop because I was laughing so much at you and this fictional character and the podcast back then. That was the absolute heyday of Celtic podcasts. Sorry.
No, do you know, I actually think everything's become a bit too serious. Without blowing our trumpet, I think everything's become very, very, very serious online amongst all football fans. Used to be a bit of a laugh. What do you think our next guest and person whose name I forgot, made up name, I forgot earlier today, Mr. Eddie Pearson? How are you doing?
Hi, that was quite an introduction. Thanks. I was going to go away and come back in again. It was going to take that long. lovely to speak to you both again. Last time we spoke was September, and we were just at the early stages of the Ange Revolution. I'm not quite sure what your question was. Podcasting has become too serious. I'm not really in a position to comment on that because I must be honest and say I'm not really listening to any of them at the moment. I just think it's all got a bit samey, and I think we're probably getting too old for this podcasting game, if we're being perfectly frank with each other, gentlemen.
No.
It's a young man's game, this.
There's a market for mildly frustrated and usually quite happy middle-aged men, and the bracket of what class is middle-aged has just moved up about 10 years in my last 10 years of my life. Don't you think, Lums?
Well, I think you're probably right, but I mean, hang on, don't want to begin at the stage of being old codgers moaning about the youth of the... I mean, I don't listen to many of them. There's one, I'm not going to name check because one of them's really annoying me right now, so I won't name the podcast, but there's one that I would listen to. I'd kind of go out of my way to listen to, but that's really about this, about that. I'm listening to other stuff now. I don't think more serious, because that seems like a criticism. It's a different kind of thing, isn't it? It's, tactics and, data, and that's, it's a bit like football itself, really. So I think the podcasting world reflects the football world, or is reflecting the football world.
That one that you mainly listen to, mm-hmm. That's Heart and Hand, isn't it?
I only listen to Heart and Hand when they lose. I've got two favourite podcasts. One's called Dead Eyes, which is about an actor who was fired from Band of Brothers by Tom Hanks because he had dead eyes. It's just finished. The third series in which Tom Hanks was interviewed, so Dead Eyes, you got to listen to that. And the other favourite podcast is Heart and Hand when Rangers lose. Honestly, it's the first thing I listen to. I don't even listen to the Celtic podcast or Super Score, but I just go straight on Heart and Hand, and it's brilliant. It's food for the soul.
Eddie, you just before we get started, your go-to podcasts? Very quickly, so I well remember. Lawrence, how do you manage to make three seasons out of Tom Hanks finding an actor?
Oh, it's a brilliant show. It's more about the process of the life of an actor, like a jobbing actor, the rejections, the ups and downs. It's absolutely fascinating. It's had some amazing guests, Seth Rogen, John Hamm, all sorts of really, really amazing people in Hollywood. It started off really, really tiny. I don't think anybody listened to it, and all it just exploded, and it became a real thing. And then the Tom Hanks episode at the end is phenomenal. No spoilers, but you got to start at the start. And if you're interested in the life of a Hollywood or a marginal actor, this is the show for you. It's brilliant.
Sorry, Eddie, I interrupted there. What's your go-to pods?
I'm just trying to think there. What am I listening to mostly at the moment? The Always Sunny podcast. I'm enjoying that at the moment. That's quite entertaining. The Price of Football is good. I don't know if anybody listens to that. They're a bit sort of always on the fan side, regardless of how much corruption is going on at their club. So, for example, like they would be on the side of Newcastle fans, just honest fans, wanting the best for the club. And you think, maybe there's a wee bit more to whether that's right or not, that clubs fans should benefit from dubious financial practice. And that's not to say that Newcastle have got dubious financial practices, but you take my point. And I listen to Pivot. I don't know if any of you listened to that.
Oh, yeah, I do. Oh, Scott Galloway.
Yeah.
And Karen Swisher. Oh, that's brilliant.
I love that. I thought that would be right up your street. So that as well. And I'm trying to think of what else it would... Wit Beyond Measure podcast by our old friend Anthony Murray, who's decided to pull it recently, but there's always a bit of entertainment to be had in that. But that's pretty much me. I can't say I listen to many Celtic podcasts at all at the moment. I listen to the Huddle Breakdown. So when you're saying that you don't want to do tactics or you don't want to talk about data, I'll just rip up all my notes that I've went carefully put together for today's game. Sat and watched that whole game back again, made a huge amount of notes for an in-depth analysis, really, you know, going into the heart and soul of the tactical breakdown of what went wrong and what went right today. But I was just going to talk about, I'm in, same as usual, is that what's happening now? I thought that's what the modern day podcast was all about, just searing insight and analysis.
No, and so to illustrate that we are not a modern day podcast, ours is just our gut feel reaction to the game and not doing any analysis whatsoever and then getting things wrong and not remembering what the next game is and having to look it up on our phones frantically while the podcast's going on. That's what our listeners want. They don't want this searing insight.
Yeah, my big worry is, let's see, for the sake of a cheap laugh there, I think I might have ripped up a letter that I was supposed to keep. So you talk amongst yourselves and I'm just going to try and put this back together to make sure it isn't a letter.
Mrs. McGlumper's going to be taking you to task.
I might not be getting to vote on Thursday because this might be my voting card. Right. No, we're all right. We're all right. That's okay. I've used that one. Right, sorry, carry on. Just don't mind me. That's fine. I hope that got a cheap laugh. Right,
so right, Lawrence, your big build-up is... how are things going with the Michaela magazine? I just thought I'd give you an early plug since we're talking about podcasts. How's that going?
It's brilliant. The new one's just about done. There's one piece to...
I saw you tweet about it. That's what I thought I'd ask.
One piece to get submitted. And the writer is very lazy, and that's me. But that'll be submitted this week. Brilliant. It's coming out in June. Incredible. I guess we can say it's a big exclusive front cover. We got access to Muirfield this week, one of the most notoriously all-male golf clubs in the world. Finally opened its doors to women. We've got a stunning picture on the front cover by Murdo McLeod of Guardian fame, of the first woman member walking through the gates of Muirfield. Absolutely, oh gosh, when I saw it come in, I was spine tingling. So that's really, so it's coming in about 4 or 5 weeks' time. It's really, really good. A great piece by Danny Garavelli, who of Scotland and Sunday fame. She's just one of my favourite writers, one of the best writers in Scotland. So she's writing. She spent a couple of hours at Muirfield with Murdo. Anyway, there you go. Plug in. MacKellarMagazine.com.
And the other thing, you know how we talked once before in the podcast about things that people don't know go on in the world. You gave me an insight into Live Aid that I didn't know. I was mentioning that I had been to see Loy Cole this week at the Royal Concert Hall. It was full of men, 50 to mid-60s, wearing jeans where now the waistband was larger than the leg length, but they still were retaining their Doc Martens on. And you then proceeded to tell me that, first of all, Live Aid was pretty much a Polydor Records production, pretty much.
Polydor. I mean, obviously the big bands were the big bands, but see, around the margins, it was a kind of Polydor. The people kind of running the nuts and bolts were, so they were kind of biased towards acts. You know, it's not a big scandal. I mean, who cares now?
No, but, it's
I mean,
not it was, a scandal. It's just that, you know, it's one of those things you just don't know.
Yeah, it was. And what I said to you was, you know, Lloyd Gold, by no means were we a huge band, but we came pretty close, you know, to making the bill. Would have been way down, you know, obviously would have been on still before anybody arrived or anything like that, but we were quite close. That'd have been something, wouldn't it? Instead, I watched it at my then girlfriend's house in Saltcoats. So there you go. So close yet so far.
So close yet an absolute million miles away.
Aye, exactly.
It all comes back to Saltcoats, doesn't it? It always does.
It always comes. Always comes back to Saltcoats.
Are we human? Anyway, are we Saltcoats? Yeah. Anyway. So yeah, that I didn't know that. It was pretty much that's anyway. On to the game today. First of all, Eddie, thoughts on going into the game prior to knowing the team. What were your thoughts going into it?
My first reaction was obviously it would be good to win, but a draw wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. The key priority was not to reduce the gap between us from 6 to 3 points. So anything less than a defeat would have been a good result. I was optimistic that we wouldn't perform as we had done in the Cup semi-final. I felt as if we were going to lose one of the two games, that was the one to lose. I felt fairly optimistic about the quality of the squad we could put out. And also in comparison to the squad that they could put out, the fact that they have, and let's call a spade, two massive ties on either side of this game against Red Bull Leipzig, meant that we would be in a strong position. So I was feeling quite good. The fact that there was going to be 700 of their supporters in a sit in the family stand, and they would be maybe within, I was going to say a stone's throw, but maybe that's not really appropriate at this particular time to say, but they were certainly relatively close to the family.
Within a seat throw or a bottle throw, which does remind me,
I think we do need to comment on some of the really shocking scenes that we saw at the game today. You know, scenes that nobody wants to see at all. And whoever it is that keeps giving John Terry tickets to come to Celtic Park and a scarf really has to be spoken to and needs to be taken outside and dealt with. You know, I don't want to see that man anywhere near Celtic Park ever again. That's just unacceptable face of modern football.
We need to get Tony Hadley back instead.
Definitely. You must have a Tony Hadley anecdote.
No, I don't know. Decent lad. No, but did you see the reaction from Espanyol's fans about John Terry pitching up? What a traitor to the nation he was. I mean, just bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. Who cares? Anyway, John Terry. I was quite surprised, actually, given his personality profile, we'll leave it at that. Yeah, you're dead right.
Did you not know he's a huge Celtic fan? I mean, genuinely is.
I think I probably did, but I didn't. You know, I still can't understand why. I mean, he just seems like not like a Celtic fan. Maybe I've got the wrong idea what a Celtic fan should be like, but he certainly doesn't fit the profile. But yeah, I guess I'm just glad we haven't. Yeah, Dermot Desmond hasn't hauled him into some coaching job or manager's job or something like that. I think when the job was around, somebody told me that Terry, he didn't want the hassle. Somebody had asked him, "Do you fancy that Celtic job?" And, "Oh no, I'm not moving up there." And, "Oh God, this happened the next thing." So I mean, I guess the idea was floating around somewhere in the ether, but I don't think he was interested. Not that he should have got it or would have got it.
Your thoughts going into the game, Blums?
My theory, I had the good fortune to play a lot of football when I was younger with some guys who made it, played for Scotland, etc., etc. And they told things always stuck with me. The team that needs to win a match usually wins a match. So going into it today, you know, they had to win. They had to win it, right? And we could have, we a draw would have been fine, as Eddie said. A draw was fine. Would have been fine for us. And I just think that affects all other things being equal. And I do think these two teams are really quite well matched. But the team that needs to win usually wins, and that's what happened in the cup semi final. If we'd gone on to win the treble, that would have been just dire for them. So they really, really put it all out there. And again, I think they really, really were duty bound to put it all out there again today. So I like Eddie, I was quite happy. I would quite happily have accepted a draw, kind of knowing all of that. Same at Ibrox, which is why the win was such a pleasant surprise. But in terms of, I was kind of, you know, I was stuff kicking around a week about Kyogo and Giacomakis playing together. I just thought, wow, you know, I didn't think that was going to happen, and it didn't happen. Because I think Ange is a, you know, obviously fairly switched on manager, so I think he would have been happy with a draw, and I think he kind of played a little bit like that. Ultimately, over the 90 minutes, I know we did far the better in the first half, but I was happy, would have been happy with a draw.
The team, Eddie, what were your thoughts when the team came out? Because obviously mentioned there of Giamakis and possibly Kyogo out left instead of Maeda. So what was your thoughts on the team?
I was quite comfortable with the team. I know there was a lot of talk about the big man starting up front to have a sort of physical presence and bringing Kyogo on when they'd started the tyre. But I think Kyogo's a better player. And I think that you start with your best players wherever possible. I don't think we get as much out of him on the left wing as we would through the middle. So I think it was the right decision to start with him up front. Maeda, I'm still not convinced that Maeda has the technical abilities to play out wide. But certainly there's no arguing with his commitment and his willingness to run and shut them down. So I was okay with that. I felt that Jota's goal last week was a real positive for him, and it meant that hopefully he would put on a show, because I think, let's be honest, I don't think he did it at Hampden, and so we'd be looking for him to show something. That my concerns were really more in terms of how the midfield's going to line up, and Hatate, I had my wee worries about Hatate, because I think the statement he made about a fortnight ago about feeling physically and mentally drained and tired and in need of a rest, I think for him to come out and say that, it's very honest. I think it reflects that maybe the culture that he's coming from, where he's been fairly transparent about how he's feeling about things. But I thought that sent out a message saying this guy's head's no there at the moment for the run-in, and I worried that might be an issue. And I think, well, we can go on to talk about that later on, but I think that maybe that did show up during the game. Back line took care of itself. I don't have any arguments. We obviously couldn't go with anybody other than Ralston at right back, and Taylor's been performing well. I think that perhaps today wasn't really, certainly the second half wasn't his best day. And a goalkeeper's always going to get a pick, because a conversation that perhaps we've not had is that, I don't know about the rest of you, but Hart was never one of my favourites before he came to Celtic Park. But I just can't get away from how important a player he has become, and how much of a leader he's becoming the team, and I don't think we would be having the success that we're currently enjoying this season if not for the fact that Hart was there. And I don't mean because of important saves like he did today. I just mean in terms of the leadership, the experience that he brings. I think that there was definitely a void there with Brown going, and Hart has really filled that quite successfully. McGregor has been a fantastic captain, don't get me wrong, but I think just somebody that's been there and done it, that provides a degree of stability and maturity in the team. And Hart has really provided that. So in the main, it was pretty much as expected. I had a wee bit of concern about Hatate up front, in midfield, and I like Kyogo up front ahead of the big man. So I was quite comfortable with it overall.
Interesting you say about Hatate, because I do think he looks... there's a guy that I follow on Twitter who we've had on the podcast. Unfortunately, I can't seem to find the audio because my computer rebooted. So, Thomas, if you're listening, I will get it sorted. But he's not a Hatate fan, and I'm prepared to give him time, because the guy's effectively played one and a half seasons non-stop. Yeah. And in the middle of that, he's travelled halfway around the world. And I think Japan, in the developed world, is one of the most closed cultures. Something like 95% of people in Japan were born in Japan. So it's not as if it's... You know, it'd be quite a culture shock for him to come to Glasgow. So I'll give him all the time in the world to get this right, or certainly a summer. Anyway, what's your thoughts on the team, Lawrence?
Well, pretty much the same as Eddie's. You know, you don't like Hitati. Well, who do you play? Who are you going to play in there? I mean, what are the other options? I can't really, you know, you can't bring, do you play Beaton? Do you play Rogic? I mean, who do you play? I mean, he really is, that's our... I mean, I guess there's an argument between O'Reilly and Rogic. So, I mean, that's the only real toss-up. But the other two essentially pick themselves.
Is there a case for Turnbull? Maybe not that game in particular, but is it next couple of games, is there a case for bringing Turnbull in?
Well, the only thing, you know, how fit is he? You know, I mean, is he eating crisps like Harry is all the time? Or is he... certainly. But, I mean, there's been little cameos the last few games. I mean, are you going to throw him in? Maybe. Again, it largely depends on fitness. I was never really a huge Turnbull fan. I think he's got a long way to go. I mean, there's certainly potential there, but certainly not today. I wouldn't have played him. The one thing I would say about our lineup, and I mean, we are small. We are a small team compared to them. They are, every single one of them, I'm just looking through it, Lundstrom, unit, Arfield, unit, Bassey, Bolton, even Tavernier's a big guy. They're a, you know, a Rebo, a unit. Our guys are small. You know, I guess we'll come on to the kind of the transfer window in the summer. But we need to upgrade in positions. But I think we need to upgrade in size and physicality as well. Part of the reason we lost at Hamden was the sheer physicality. So that was my only, and all, but it always is when we play them. I always think they are a big, big team, and we are not so big. We're obviously a little bit more athletic, a little bit faster. That's what makes it. You know, I was saying earlier, basically they're two very evenly matched teams, but it's really, really interesting because they're so such different teams. You know, they play in such different ways, so it's really you kind of can't take your eyes off it. But as for the team, yeah, Kyogo definitely. I mean, you could see the way Ange talked about him after the Ross County game. There's no way he was going to the bench. There's no way he was going to be pushed out on the left side. As you said, Eddie, he was very ineffective at Ibrox in the first game when he was out on the left side. He came inside and he should have scored a couple. Played through the middle, so much better there. But I mean, it's a good dilemma I have if you're Ange, I guess.
I've not watched the cup semi-final back, so I've still got my gut feel reactions to that game from watching it live at the ground, and I've not watched this game back. And I always find it interesting. I was saying this to Eddie earlier on when we were organising the podcast. I always find it interesting to come straight back after a game and go on Twitter because.
Oh, man.
Well, one of the things is because the people who've tweeted most during the game are watching it on the telly and are not there. And I'm not saying being there you have the right view, and not being there you have the wrong view. I just think often in a tight game, being at the ground, you have a very different view from people who are or impression of what's going on to people who are watching it on the telly. So I always find it interesting to pick up that, although I do find a lot of people online are moany bastards. And my thoughts on the cup final was part of the cup semi final was part of the problem was Hitati was anonymous and Rogic is not great against teams who are at our ability or better, and every time the ball went to him, but Bassey just was right behind him and he lost possession, and we improved in the cup semi, despite the fact that's when they scored. We improved in the cup final, in the cup semi final, when he went off and O'Reilly came on. How did you see the start of the game, Lawrence? I know you've sort of mainly been highlights that you've watched rather than the actual live.
No. I went to bed late last night. Quite funny, actually. Woke up at 6:30. Game had started at 4 a.m. in the morning for me. Woke up, I slept through, very unusually slept through the night. And there's that trepidatious, like 20 seconds, you kind of reach over for your phone. And you type in, I just type, to get Celtic in for me, I just type Celtic into the Google search, and there's that 20 seconds till it comes up, you know, and it goes straight to the result of the latest match, and I was like, oh my God. Anyway, 1-1, and I thought, well, that's okay. Subsequently watched the game, I thought they did pretty well. Oh, hang on, let me think about this. Again, evenly matched, not much in the first 15, 20 minutes. We certainly didn't put much into it. They had that, I think, the Kent chance. They had, I think that was after, I don't know, 12, 15 minutes, something like that. I was slightly concerned. I mean, I wasn't concerned because I knew what the score was, but, I, you know, if I'd been watching it live, I would have been slightly concerned because on the balance, it was like a 52-48 in their favour, I would say. We created absolutely nothing. But again, I mean, that's what these two teams are. Happy enough. It wasn't like a, you know, wasn't like a battering. But yeah, I thought they would have been happier with a start than we were. Straight away, though, again, we might come on to this. I'm very concerned about our distribution from the back. Again, we're very easily, well, it's a very obvious press. You know, you press the other three and you let Starfield bring the ball. And that's it. Everybody, you know, every decent team, that's how they're going to play against us. And that was obvious from the start again. But yeah, happy enough, not overly concerned, but certainly not, oh my God, we're going to batter them. Obviously, it wasn't the same as the February game, but it never is it?
Harry, Eddie, come on. Harry, is this another one of those podcasts where you've got a guest on who wasn't actually watching the game that you're going to talk about at the time?
And do you know, I seen it have a run of that.
Are you the new Lackeymore?
No. Hang on. I watched, as soon as I got up, I watched the game from start to end. I don't, you know.
It's you just didn't watch it as live. Is that what you're saying? You just didn't watch it as live.
I know I did watch it as live, but I knew the score.
You
that
knew
was
the
thing.
That's not as live. Well,
like,
one's a disaster when you're watching it live.
Hey, no, hang on a minute. That's, the clue's in as live. It doesn't say live. As live. What the hell's wrong with you, man?
Let's you not need to get take this opportunity to switch this off right now because you, it's not going to get any better than this.
Yeah, but as live. I see that. It's actually. I get so nervous sometimes, Eddie. I might be up at 4 o'clock in the morning, but I can't watch it because I'm too nervous. It's getting worse for me.
Lackeymore had the same problem. I think that's why he didn't watch it either. You've got a lot in common, the two of you.
I agree with you, Lawrence. I'm getting worse with age. I can watch a game at Celtic Park fine and not be that nervous, and you're watching it on the telly. I'm getting worse with age watching it on the telly, and I absolutely hate it. And the problem now is there's so many games that I'm watching on a computer, on a stream or something like that, but then you get a text, you've like, because I've got a watch, you know, you get the message, you get your vibration on your wrist. and the ball's at the halfway line and you're thinking, which way is this ball going to go now? And if it then... and then you start getting more and more vibrations in your wrist and you're thinking, oh God, what's going to happen? To the extent that sometimes I'm at a game and if someone sends me a text at a game, for a split second I'll be thinking, what's happening?
I'll tell you a worse one, right? So I'm watching it on a stream. I'll be up at 4 and 1. I've been watching it on stream and I am so nervous that I'm also on Twitter constantly refreshing the word Celtic in the search engine on Twitter. So I think, because the stream's going to be about 45 seconds to a minute behind, so I'll know if something's happened, you know, 30 seconds before it actually happens on my stream. And if it's something bad for Celtic, I close the computer for a minute until it's over. And then I open it up again. You know, it's I don't know, it might be a nice thing, but maybe the older you get, the more you love them. Maybe that's what it is.
You should use flash scores or live scores for that. You can get that. There are a couple of settings ahead in that.
This is definitely
a podcast for individuals of a certain age, isn't it?
Team
will be like, no way, man. I'm not listening to this, man.
The other one, Harry, was you were talking about the kind of type of Celtic fans on Twitter. I mean, it is a fascinating. I don't know, people's expectations and demands are just ridiculous. Modern Celtic, you know, we played to 11 minutes and we're no beating them. But you, what? You know, people are constantly moaning about everything. You know, we're no winning, we're no dominating, we're no 5-0 up. It's just constant. This is pure torture watching Celtic. Well, you know what?
But that's because they're not really Celtic fans. They're what Harry calls Old Firm fans. Because they support the concept of the Old Firm and being better than Rangers. And they want to see us beat Rangers. So, for example, today's result, you come back in after the game and you switch on and see what the comments are, and the folk who were at the game, as you say, are, this is garbage and that wasn't good enough. And I've come out of that game thinking, a bit rocky the last 10, 15 minutes or so, but overall, we've put ourselves in a fantastic position to win this league, because that's what I want us to do. I want us to win the league. So this game was part of the process to win the league, and we're a step closer to doing that. Whereas they've watched this game thinking, this game is an opportunity to be better than Rangers and to lord it over some of the people they know. And if we don't win that game, then they don't have the opportunity to feel better than some of the people they know. So it's not about Celtic winning, really. It's about their personal relationships with guys that are Rangers fans. And that's why they're moaning. They're not really moaning because they don't think Hatate had a good game. They're moaning because their sense of self is so wrapped up in being better than the other group. That's all they're interested in. That was a good result today for us. See, when you look at it personally and you think, we're a step closer to the title. That's the whole purpose of playing in this competition. So we should be happy enough with that. And yeah, 3 points would have been better. Don't get me wrong. But the object was not to lose today. And we didn't. So that's a good result for us. But you wouldn't think that when you first log on and you take a look at some of the comments that have been made. Some people have said some mental stuff. But it's because they're not really seeing it as a benefit to Celtic. They're seeing it about their own relationship with the people around them. My take on it, anyway.
The other thing is that just put it in, you've got to put it in context. Last summer, we didn't have a manager. We lost the league by 25 points. So Ange comes in, puts together a team in the space of 6, 7, 8 weeks. And lo and behold, 8 months later, we have a day like today, which essentially, barring a catastrophe, it wins us the league.
Radio Scotland on the way home, they read, because obviously the petted lip juveniles on the other side of the city don't speak to the main broadcast, the terrestrial broadcast providers in the country. And they read out what they'd said on Sky. They'd rather be standing in front of a Celtic badge being interviewed on Sky than in front of a logo that's got Cinch in it. How fucking petty. Anyway, Sakala was interviewed and Van Bronckhorst was interviewed and read out the course. And both of them, they didn't quite say it, but they more or less said the league's over now. Because we've got two games at home, one away. We win one of those games, even if we lose the next two, unless we lose them by about 10 goals each, we've won the league. That's all that mattered today. Not get beat, and we'll win the league.
Right, but my point again, made it earlier, is when you consider today's game in isolation, well, you essentially can, because you have to look at today's game in the context of what we needed, in the context of how we played. Maybe Ange would have played Rodic, O'Reilly's a bit more, not massively defensive-minded, but, so he probably picked a slightly different team to the one he would have picked if he was trying to win it. If that was his sole purpose. If we were in their position, Ange would have picked a more attacking team. But he didn't, because we didn't, ultimately we didn't need to win the game. So again, considered.
Also in the context and all things considered of, that's four games in a row that we've played a team who are in the semi-finals of a European competition. Three of our players in Kyogo, Maeda and Hatate have all three played a season and a half of football non-stop. And as you said, Ange came in just before the season starts. So he's not done a full pre-season. All of these players that are playing, the bulk of them, have not had a pre-season with us. And in four games against that team who are playing in a European semi-final, over 90 minutes, we've had two wins and two draws. So some context to the whingers. Yes. I just don't get the whinging. It's just beyond me. As you say, Eddie, it is, I think it's Old Firm fans who's only, and I think a lot of it, without sounding again to keep on in our We Are Boring Old Men podcast, if you are under the age of 25, 30, you've known nothing but complete dominance, pretty much, by Celtic. So it's really difficult to deal with something that's not complete dominance.
Devil's advocate to that, though, just to undermine my own point, is that this should continue to be complete dominance. And the fact that we have actually got a league competition here is because of the shocking mismanagement that took place over the last 3 or 4 years. Do you know what I mean? We should never have got to a position where it was this close. We never got to a position where they beat us by 25 points last season, you know. And, obviously,
last season never happened. Nobody saw it. Tell me somebody who saw it. It never happened.
This is us on track for 10 in a row with fans in the stadium. I think that's the way you look at it. But we should never have got to a position that we got into last year, and we should never get into a position we were in at the start of this season where we're having to do a rebuild job. It should be sustained progress, and it never took place. So for us to manage to get it back like this, we need to seize this opportunity and not make the same mistakes we made last year, the year before, or the year before that, and start to plan properly moving forward. Maybe that's jumping ahead of the content of what we want to talk about tonight, but I think that's a big part of what has to happen next. It's not enough just to win this league. It's not enough to get group stage Champions League football. There has to be something being created here that's going to pay long-term dividends for us. We can't keep thinking short-term, just get to the end of the season and beat Rangers. You know, because that's exactly what a lot of people are thinking about. We need to be building something.
Yeah, just to reiterate your point, Eddie, you know, right now we are actually a viable ongoing business. You know, we make a profit. You know, the mob across the street, that's not a viable business. That is a, you know, I don't know how much money they're having, the directors and et cetera, are having to pump in to keep afloat. But that won't be the case forever. So we need to really get our house in order now. You know, once again, well, they've had a decent amount of European money this year, but you know, we have a chance to bury them. You know, so when we're in the Champions League group stage next year as a 40 million bonus, we really have to foot down, really bury them this time, and so that they just disappear for, you know, a long time. I mean, they'll always be around, no doubt. Well, they weren't around before, but you know what I mean. But we have to take advantage properly this time, and we do that by much better management, much better. I mean, I've still got concerns about the way the club seems to be going about structuring itself. It doesn't seem to be much, but again, that's probably for another day. But you are dead right. We got to get the kind of management side of things right.
So Eddie, back to the game. We're playing a team, you know, let's be honest about it. We're playing a team who in just 10 years of existence and £120 million of additional debt over and above what their turnover is, they've managed to get to a European semi-final. I mean, they must be a half-decent side with that additional £120 million of revenue above their generated revenue, £120 million of debt. They must be a half-decent team to have spent such a huge amount of money and they're playing the European semi-final. So to be holding our own with them and doing better than them, that's also a good thing for us. So how did you see the first half, our goal? My gut feeling, the overall game, cool. It's really interesting coming back. It's the general context is we were much better first half and dreadful in the second half. At the game, I thought first half, they were marginally on top until we scored. Then we were a better team. Second half, eatsy peatsy, we made substitutions, we were the better team for 10 minutes, they scored against the run of play, then we are all blown out of our arses. That's my sort of general summary of where I saw it. So, Eddie, first goal, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, the first thing that occurred to me with the first goal was that there was shades of Abada's goal in the 3-0 victory. Yeah. Some of the ball comes across, you know, gets in front of Barisic again. But looking back, watching the game again when I get in, it was actually very similar to the chance that Kent had in the first 10 minutes, where he comes in on the blind side of Ralston, but just doesn't manage to put it away. It was actually probably an easier chance that Kent had. So that was their only chance in the first half. For all, you know, you're saying that perhaps they had the better of it, I don't think it was much of a game in the first half at all. I felt they stepped off us a wee bit. Let us move it about a bit. I think they were rattled by the goal. We could have had a couple more. There was the header from Jota, which was a real chance. I don't know whether he was thinking maybe he could have taken it in his chest or whatever, you know. But he looked as though he'd found a bit of form all of a sudden, taking the confidence from the goal. There was also the chance with Maida's header, where, you know, I saw a guy subsequently saying he bottled it and things like that. I thought he was trying to glance into the bottom corner, the near post bottom corner, and it just went a wee bit wide for him at the time because it was right in front of me. So that was a really good chance. There was the Kyogo one that was offside, and it was offside. I watched it back, but that was a great bit of football there. I thought that they set out to put their fullbacks under as much pressure as possible right from the kickoff. You could see that they had targeted Taylor to start with, and they had launched the ball directly into that corner, and they were all heading towards it. I was interested in the way they lined up. with Aribo playing centre forward at first, which I thought was odd. I don't really know what position he plays in depth, but I know when we were looking at him back when we had the wee handwritten note of the players we were looking at, the reason we didn't go for him was because we thought we had a better player on Rogic in that position. So I assumed he would play a bit deeper, but he played up the pitch. I felt that we were fairly comfortable in the game. I think the game was going the way we wanted it to go. At half-time, we probably could have done without. Hatate looked really tired throughout the game. There was one point where there was a break. They had a break up the park and Hatate was really labouring to get back, which was akin to the semi-final in the second half where, you know, he just didn't have the legs to keep pace. I like O'Reilly. I think O'Reilly looks a really tidy, technically good player. But I don't know if he has the energy and the dynamism that's perhaps needed yet for these games, and maybe a pre-season under his belt and a wee bit of work with the sports scientist might be required there to get him up to pace. And I think it goes back to something Lawrence was saying there when we talk about the height of the team. I would maybe talk about, in more general terms, about the physicality of our team in comparison to theirs, you know, and Lundstrom's an example of that. I mean, their chant was something about him being a silky scouser or something like that. Whatever it is, he's no silky, but he's a big guy and he's got physical presence. And the amount of times that I feel that we weren't matching up against that physical presence, even in the first half, where midfield was putting an awful lot of pressure on McGregor to do all of the work in terms of defensively and creatively and to match them. And I worry that perhaps that's the problem with our midfield three, that perhaps I don't want us to be a team of cloggers, but I think perhaps we need something to, you know, somebody that's not going to get bundled off the ball quite as easily as our two attacking midfielders seem to be. I thought that there was nothing for Hart to do in the first half at all. And I thought our centre halves, we spoke about Starfelt there, perhaps being the player that the ball, they were quite happy to leave to pass the ball out. And I don't disagree with that. And when we spoke back in September, I said I wasn't convinced by the defence yet. I'm still not 100% convinced by defence. If you give me a better quality player than Starfelt tomorrow for next season, I'll bite your hand off. But what I did think when I was watching Starfelt was that he has good positional sense. He can anticipate where the ball is going to go, and he gets on the end of it when it drops out the sky all the time. 9 times out of 10, Starfelt is there, and you know that's not the part of his game that isn't a strength. It's what he does with it once he collects it. But he's got very good defensive positional sense, and he can break down the play at that point. But it's when we're trying to build the play back up again, I think that's when he gets a bit exposed. Cameron Carter-Vickers has had a great season and it looked smashing in the first half. But overall, at half time, even being 1-0 up, thinking we should have perhaps been 3-1 up, maybe 4-1 up, I thought it was a bit of a flat encounter. I don't think it was a lot of good quality football. There wasn't a lot of passion in it. They seemed a bit passive, as if they were accepting their fate a bit meekly at that point. And I think we looked tired for the first half. And it was just, I don't know. I was delighted to be 1-0 up, but it didn't really seem to have the fire in that game in that first half that you know you would expect. Maybe that was just me, I don't know, but that certainly was my first half impression anyway.
There was a couple of things you say about Starfelt there. There was a couple of times where Sakala like raced past Taylor as if he wasn't there, and Starfelt came in and just shepherded him off for a goal kick. There was one actually where Starfelt mucks up, he's then out of position, Sakala's in behind him, Greg Taylor's with him, and then Sakala runs away from Taylor, and Starfelt manages to come back and not only go run past Taylor, but run past Sakala and shepherd him out. So his positional sense, I thought he did well with that. Lawrence, you're watching the telly. I thought the foul on Jota the physical interaction with Jota in the first half in their penalty box, they got a penalty for that in Europe against Braga.
You know, I'm fed up with the refereeing stuff in Scotland. You know, and I'm of the opinion that, when I know you might think differently, but I just think they're all fucking incompetent. I mean, it's just, you know, one, I don't think there's any. I just think they're all useless. They're all scared. Partly uselessness comes from a kind of lacking of courage. You know, I think that was a penalty, but it happens all the time. You know, when it happens. I don't think they're inherently biased towards them. But
I was talking about this. I was at a night out working Friday, and I was talking about this to a guy, and I said, the problem with Celtic fans, I agree with you. I think the problem with referees is they're shite.
They're honestly.
But we had 100 years of bias.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult. We're then morphing and being shy. So it's really difficult to just chuck away the 100 years of bias and say, actually, what's happened is since they stopped being biased, they've just been shy.
By the way, see, just on Eddie's analysis of the first half, just a couple of things I want to pick up. One, the Maeda header, I think he shat it. I don't think he was, I mean, he just had to put his forehead on the ball and it was a goal. He saw McGregor coming and he didn't fancy it. Ironically, McGregor was coming and he looked like he didn't fancy it either, but he couldn't really get out of it. And I just wonder, if I'm a teammate of Maeda and I'm looking at that, and I would be thinking, I didn't really like that. I'm sure if Roy Keane would have had a word in the dressing room at half-time. And the other thing, in Starfelt, you're dead right, positionally, I think he's really pretty decent. And he's a good defender. Best defence in the league, by the way. We've given up 9 less goals than they have, 20 to their 29. His problem is he can't take and receive the ball. There's a great Twitter feed called, I think it's called Innovate FC, which is basically devoted to analysing the deficiencies of Celtic's left-sided centre-backs. And we've not had one for years who can take the ball properly and position his body and position his foot, position the ball that he can, you know, deliver it out of defence in a competent fashion. And I think that's Starfelt's big problem. And as I said before, everybody targets it. You know, if we get somebody in that position who can actually distribute the ball good, the teams that are playing against us will have to completely readjust, because we'll be posing problems from both left and right coming out of defence. Right now, all they have to do is push us over on the left side. Starfelt has the ball. You know, we have a problem. So that's just the two things.
I think that's a key point you've just made there in terms of Starfelt. We cannot play this type of football across the back with a player like Starfelt. We can defend, and we can try and reduce the risk of goals with a player like that. But if we're going to try and play the type of football that requires us to be able to knock it about, as we saw in the second half, it all gets a bit hairy. He's just not good enough. And what you said there is spot on. He's not going to be good enough in the long term for that type of football. Another type of football, definitely. I think a Martin O'Neill type of defender, I think he could probably do that. Just launch it, get it away. You know, you don't need to play football with it. Just clear your lines. That's the type of player he is. But he's not going to be good enough long term.
I'm just surprised that Julian Ange doesn't fancy Julian. There must be obviously clearly he doesn't fancy him. But Julian was actually a decent distributor of the ball. Again, I don't think he's left sided if my memory serves right. But I mean, he's a better option. You know, bring the ball out of defence than Starfelt is. But clearly Ange has weighed Starfelt's defensive abilities over whatever, you know, Julian could bring to, you know, moving the ball out of defence. But it's stuff he can't, at this stage, I don't know how old he is, 26, 27, 20, whatever. You know, it's all about body shape. How do you shape your body when you're receiving the ball? Starfelt, you know, he's obviously naturally right footed, so he just can't do it in that position. Maybe he'd be better playing on the right side, but obviously Carter Vickers is the guy for that. He's been excellent. But, you know, we really need, we really need an upgrade in that position for next, especially in the Champions League, because, you know, Scottish teams, even likes, we're going to be playing Hearts next week. Watch Hearts. They will funnel the ball to Starfelt. They will be quite happy to see Starfelt bring the ball out. You know, and that's Robbie Nielsen. He isn't exactly brainiac, is he?
Your point, Eddie, about the way the first half went, my gut feel was they were marginally better over nothing much first half of first quarter of the game. We then score, and they had been pressing us at the back, and I thought they lost confidence to keep pressing us once we'd scored. I think they were fearful of our pace in behind and sat a wee bit deeper, and they went in at half time and obviously were told, why have you stepped off them? You need to get back in amongst them. And that's my irritation of how the game went, because I felt they then came out the second half much more back to where they were at the beginning of the first half, or pressing as high. We then make the substitutions, and for the next 10 minutes, I thought they'd reverted back to the way that they were starting. I think if we'd have scored one of those chances, they'd have lost confidence and we'd have won the game easily. We'd have seen it out easily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that the first half, and you know, I like both the fullbacks. I think they're, but I like them as honest professionals, hard-working players that will go do the best. If you're asking me, do I think they're technically good enough long-term? Are they good enough to get us to a European semi-final? Then I don't know if that, I would say that's the answer.
No.
But I think that if we're going to try and play this type of football and we want to do what Bodo Glimt did to us, for example, who are obviously maybe 4 or 5 years further down the road are playing this particular format, the only person in that back line that I think is probably able to do this is Cameron Carter-Vickers, and that includes a goalkeeper. If you're talking, and who have sang his praises of earlier tonight, if you're talking longer term, then ultimately you're looking at completely rebuilding that back line. You know, Juranovic might be coming in to right back, possibly, but I think Ralph is a smashing guy, dead wholehearted, and I love seeing a player coming through the ranks and coming through the academy and making it, and you know, that's exactly what you want to see. But ultimately, if I'm being honest, I'm going to be looking for better in that right back position. Taylor is worked incredibly hard. Taylor's had a raw deal for the fans. I think Taylor's reputation has been what's been judged an awful lot rather than his actual ability on the pitch. I thought he had a decent first half. I don't recall Sakala getting by him as many times as you seem to be saying there, Harry. I think Sakala was fairly anonymous, and I think I'd be surprised if you went and looked at the follow match report at halftime if they were being complimentary about him. So I don't think he did much.
No, because nothing came of his chances, because I thought Starfelt controlled it and shepherded it out.
But I think Taylor pushed up the pitch and did quite well. And the only time things started to fall apart for Taylor was when they made some substitutions in the second half, which we'll come on to. And I think by putting Scott Wright right up on him and pressing him, he fell apart the same way the rest of the defence fell apart at that point. But longer term, there's got to be better players out there than those three across the bank, and maybe that's a job for this summer.
Well, I think it is a job for this summer. We'll get on to this summer in a minute. This podcast will probably last for 2 hours or something like that. Give the listeners a warning before they. Yeah, and so we scored. Jota, Barisic again completely switches off to a guy coming in behind him, putting the ball in the back of the net just like he did twice in the Celtic Park game. And then we've gone through the chances. So second half, Lawrence, how did you see the second half going?
Well, obviously they came more into it. Well, we should have scored. Well, the chance that Maeda, I mean, that's a goal. Come on, and then it's done. I mean, it's a bit like Hamden, isn't it? Who missed the chance at Hamden to take us to? Was that Maeda as well?
Carter-Vickers, no, it's Carter-Vickers.
Carter-Vickers. Aye. So. Yeah, and again, I think Eddie's right. Do you know what? I was speaking to a football coach this morning, a pal of mine who watched the game. And he was saying that he thinks that Ange is a really great in-game manager, but he thinks that Van Bronckhorst is a much improved, is a big upgrade on the last guy, the Gerrard guy, in terms of in-game management. I think he made the adjustments at half-time. I think Eddie identified them. They came more into it. It was a good goal. It was a good finish. I don't know if are we blaming Joe Hart for the goal? Are we?
I think Joe Hart. I'm not saying it was a dreadful mistake, but I think Joe Hart will think he should have not conceded it.
Well, I mean, it was a sweet strike. You know,
it was near post, and he's standing at his near post.
Yeah, but anyway,
It was hit pretty low. I hear what you're saying. The default is a keeper should never get beat his near post, and I get that. But it did come round Ralston, and it did hit it low and hard. And I could see why Hart would make a case for it being something that he couldn't have avoided, because it was a hard one to stop. I think the build up to it was good. The only thing I would say is I think there was a foul before they got to that point. You know.
Go on, Eddie. I jumped in.
And so that you kind of jumped ahead a wee bit, and I've talked over the top of you, Lawrence. You go, sorry, my apologies.
No, you're fair enough. And again, after that, you know, they got a goal. Was it against them? Was it against them? Probably not against the run. You know, 67 minutes, you're looking 1-1. No, that's probably
at that point it was against the run of play. We just made the substitutions. We'd taken off the anonymous Itati. We'd taken off. There was a point just before O'Reilly went off that I thought, wow, he was the nearest player to the ball, and the Rangers player got it with ease. His lack of bursts, his lack of bursts of pace was, I thought, was standing out a mile in the second half, and he had to go off.
Sorry, just to go off the tangent, there's a lack of burst of pace. Believe it or not, I was watching Aberdeen versus Tunty yesterday, mainly because the boy, the Celtic analytics boy, said, why the fuck am I watching this game? I turned it on just to have a look. Dermot Gallagher, I have never seen a slower professional footballer in my life. Talk about cart horse. Anyway, sorry. Matt O'Reilly wouldn't be at Celtic if he had a decent pace. And he is a phenomenal player. He's 6'2", unbelievable touch on the ball, a very intelligent footballer, just runs like a cart horse. I mean, maybe, as you said earlier, maybe he'll get the sports scientists will go on to him, improve his diet. But again, he looks like a boy who looks after himself. We'll see. Overall, though, I mean, this has become an issue. We seem to just run out of puff. Two-thirds into the game, we're toast. And you think, hang on a minute, they just had a big European game on Thursday night. And they look fresher and fitter than we are. And I don't understand what that is. So looking at the game, we do a hell of amount of pressing. I'm not saying anything new there, but it is astonishing how much running our front six do, our front five do. But it is, maybe we need to get better athletes or maybe we need to get fitter, but, I mean, it really is. It's marked, especially in these games against them, that, we seem to run out of puff two-thirds into the game.
The reason for that, in my opinion, is that, see, the pressing game works when you've got the vast majority of possession, because you only need to press to get a ball back. You know, if you're playing a Dundee United or whoever, you know, that in the main you've got 75 to 80% possession, so you're really only pressing, it might look good, but you're not pressing that often. Now, that game, and again, you know, we'll not get bogged down in stats, but there was a couple of things come up at Sky at the end, and one of them was that we had 51% of possession. So that would suggest that we were having to press 49% of the game, you know, more or less. They won it, were knackered by the end of that. To play that high-tempo game, the main, you have to be able to retain possession. And we weren't good enough at retaining possession today. We lost it for the midfield. We lost it for the defence into midfield. But midfielders never managed to retain it. And up front, it didn't stick often enough. So pressing the game constantly, while they had as much of the game as we did, no one was sharp. Their pressing game was really, they just pressed our defence. And their defence might have you sat back a bit. But I think that's the last two games that we've played them. I think that's why we've tired so badly. It's because that style of football only works when you have you dominate possession.
And just to go back to Starfelt, they only have to press three members of our defence. They don't want to press number four. They don't want to press the fourth guy. They want them to actually have the ball. So there is that. I think that's a pretty fair point, Eddie. But you'll be interested to see, how do we address that? How do we address it? Do we get, as I say, do we get better athletes, or do we kind of change it up a little bit? Ironically, Andrew showed himself as a manager or a coach to, you know, when he needs to play a more conservative, he kind of does it. So in the context of us only having 49% of possession, you know, you'd think you'd be a slightly more cautious on the pressing front, but maybe it's a case, it's against the nature of players like Maeda and Kyogo. Even Jota, I mean, they just seem to want to press and press and press and press and press. Maybe in a game like today, maybe to the detriment of our performance, because certainly after they scored, we weren't quite hanging on, but it wasn't that pretty to watch. I mean, we didn't offer much of a threat, and if anybody was going to score, you would probably say it would have been them.
So on that, both at the Cup semi and today, I think them equalising, they seem to take a huge lift and a massive influx of energy, and particularly Carter Vickers and Ralston. To me, Carter Vickers, I could not believe how much he was blown out of his backside. All of a sudden,
he's played every minute, just about. I mean, when did he last get a rest? You know, and maybe again, all the good stats boys and the podcast, they're reversing to me. Maybe this is Ralston. This is what he is. You know, what's been gone before in this season has been a bit of an outlier. And he's actually reverting to the mean. And the mean of Anthony Robson is a very kind of average, you know, hardworking and committed guy, but maybe not, you know, maybe not what we need. And for Carter Vickers, I mean, as I say, he hasn't had a rest, you know. So, but they, again, they do. Well, nobody looked at high energy after they scored. We really seem to struggle.
Your point about referees and they just lack the courage to make decisions and they're just pretty crap. For me, that was demonstrated at 2 points right at the end of the game that I don't think would have made any difference to the outcome, but it just demonstrated the position. One was when Abada broke free. Now, they were catching him, and I thought he deliberately ran across Rangers players so he would get the foul because he knew he wasn't getting away. However, I think that's a red card. And then the second thing is he added on 2 minutes of injury time, and Carter Vickers went down for the first 30 seconds or 2 minutes of injury time, and he blew it bang on 2 minutes of injury time because I thought he was thinking one each, perfect. I do not want a controversial thing to happen in injury time that one either Celtic win the league or Rangers get back into the title. And I thought 2 minutes is the minimum he could give for that. That to me summed up shitebag refereeing.
Well, how many substitutions were there in the second half?
We made 5, didn't we?
There was a total of 4 stoppages for substitutions because we brought 3 on at the one time and things like that. So I think in total, 30 seconds each would have given you the 2 minutes without any injuries at all.
Plus the 30 seconds for the goal.
Yeah, give you that. I think that the stuff about like the good game or no, I don't think he got the penalty claim wrong in the second half for the, you know, the claim for the handball that we put in, because having watched it back again, I don't think there was much the guy could do about it. His body was turned and his hand was tucked in. I wanted it absolutely, and I shouted for it in the game. I don't think that was a penalty. I think it's just a general level of mediocrity in his performances. You know, small decisions, things like the foul that was given, the handball that was given on the D, and he carried on playing, and I'm assuming it was a linesman that pulled him back in the second half, and then he gave us it 10 yards away from where that foul was taking place,
because they all lined up where the foul took place.
Yeah, you know, I do think that I didn't think Abada had control of the ball. Was it a goal scoring opportunity for that foul that you were talking about there, Harry? You know that.
I just think if you pull a guy down with your arm at neck height, I think that's close to a red card challenge.
Particularly if you're wearing a blue jersey, I agree with you 100% in that regard. You know, but I just thought that he was going across the way. He wasn't going towards goal. I'm not sure if he'd control the ball at that point. There was lots of reasons why not to give a red card. That made an easy decision for him. I thought he was mediocre as they always are. And I think the quality of whoever's training referees and whoever's deciding it, these are the referees that should be stepping forward to officiate at the top level. That's clearly the problem. I'm hopeful that he's decided not to go out tonight, because surely he's learned his lesson for the last time he did that. Maybe he thought he could go out tonight when it was one each, but that's the bigger issue in terms of whether they're genuinely at it or not. But they're just not very good. They're just not very good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, no Scottish referees at the World Cup again, is that right? I think I read that somewhere. We're just terrible, and it's widely recognised now that the old boys, I think there was some boy from, I want to say Clifton Hill or some team that was the head of the referees committee for UEFA, and I think he's gone now, and it's proper people doing it now, and I think it's sort of been recognised that Scottish referees, we don't get anything now. They don't get to go to any of the big tournaments, and then when, you know, they go and referee a European game, they're usually, I mean, Willie Collum caused an absolute uproar in Germany last year or something. I mean, it's just terrible. I don't know why.
Apparently our referees are not getting, no matter how good they are, not getting major games until we get VAR. And
they've not got experience of using VAR, so they can't be put forward for big international tournaments, I think is the thinking behind.
Anyway, it's, I'll be interested to see if we can find a way to fuck up VAR as well. I mean, it's not beyond the capability of Scottish referees and whoever runs them. But just terrible. Actually, I was just looking back. We have 3 substitutions with 61 minutes. We got worse after the substitutions.
No, I thought we were a much better team after the substitutions. It was after they scored we got worse. I thought after the substitutions, that's when we did that one of the options where we played it into the box, and Tom Rogic did a fantastic impersonation of Tom Rogic and fucked it up.
Yeah, well, they were only on for 6 minutes when they scored.
No, but the point I'm making is, after those substitutions, we were camped in there, just outside their box. They go up the park and score. I thought they were the right substitutions. Apart from, I wouldn't have brought, in terms of the players off, I'd have brought Beaton on for the physicality. I just wouldn't. Rogic is not a player to bring on against a team who's your standard or better, because he can't control the ball in the requisite amount of time that's required. He wants to fiddle about with it. He can't just pass and move and move and run. And then when he loses possession, he runs like I run, feel like I'm running when I'm at the train station and the train's about to leave. You know, it's like slow motion. He jogs.
Sorry, go on, Eddie.
I think Rogic is at a smashing season in comparison to maybe last season, the season before. I'm a bit surprised he was up for one of the Player of the Year awards ahead of Carter Vicker. But, you know, I think that I see he's won goal of the season for the goal against Dundee United, where he just waltzed through them all. And when he's in the mood, it's great. But the last two games he's played in against Rangers, I don't think he's been particularly good. I think he caused us a couple of difficulties on the edge of our box today. When he just didn't step in enough and wasn't determined enough, and he played very much the last couple of games like the Tom Rogic of last season, and that if it's no going for him, he's no use to you. You know, if you're dominating possession and it's all working well and it's an easy game to win, he's great to watch and he will run riot. But is he a game changer on his own?
Well, he was at Ibrox. He was at Ibrox. That's what makes him so frustrating, though. He had a great game at Ibrox.
They gave him space and time. They've worked out the last two games. If Tom Rogic has got the ball, he just closes him down. They can't cope.
I think that's a key factor there. I think that they left him and let him do it. And if you do leave him and give him space and time, then yeah, because he's got great technical ability. But see, to demand the right to play, which you sometimes have to do, particularly in these games, I don't know if Tom Rogic is always the right one for those games initially. It didn't look good in the semi-final. I think the way Bassey kept coming through, stepping out of defence and stepping into him, he didn't like it. He wasn't getting the decisions for the referee, and he should have been getting some of them, but he wasn't getting them, and his solution to that was to spit the dummy, that's a bit harsh, but just to stop trying. He wasn't even laying the ball off and turning. He was trying to retain possession, and it just wasn't working. And again today, I felt as if he didn't have a significant impact when he came on. I think I would have agreed with the substitutions because I felt that we were tiring. I probably wouldn't have started Hattati in the second half. I'd have put Bitton on right for the start, move McGregor up one, then brought on Rogic for O'Reilly, and certainly bring on the big man for Kyogo. So I couldn't fault the decisions. I just wasn't sure that they ended up having the desired effect. I think we still suffered without Rogic really performing. I think we lost something with McGregor moving up one. I think perhaps he was screening the defence a bit better than we give him credit for sometimes, and we got a bit exposed there as well. And the big man gave them a problem in defence, but it just didn't really come off for us the same way. So you're saying there, Harry, that the first the 10 minutes after the subs, it was working well. It was working okay. They did break up the park. It was a counter-attacking move that got the goal. And I think up until then, we probably were quite comfortable. Once that goal went in, we started to be a bit rocky. And we didn't have a great last 15 minutes, certainly the last 10, the last five, really ropey. But I wouldn't say that we were still having the better of the game because of those subs.
Hey, Harry, you're the goalkeeping expert. How would you rank Hart's save?
But you know, the funny thing is, there was a debate in WhatsApp group that we were in earlier in the week about Craig Gordon being up for Player of the Year award, and somebody said Joe Hart's the best keeper in the league. Getting back to Eddie's point earlier, there's been some fantastic saves that he's made. However, I don't think he's made a catalogue of saves. I think, you know, I'm not criticising. I think his presence in the defence has been the key thing rather than his game-changing saves that he's made. He's made some fantastic saves in Europe, and I thought the save today was fantastic. I think he could have marginally done better at the goal. I think he could have stopped the goal. But I thought that was a brilliant save. But I think the key to Joe Hart is his presence in the back. And I'm like you. I was always amazed that Joe Hart managed to make 75 appearances for England, because I didn't think he was as great as all the English media used to talk about him being. But he's been a fantastic signing for us. What's your thoughts?
I'm watching it and I go, oh my God, wonder save. And I think, well, that's a pretty decent save. I don't know if it kind of the ball deviated at the end when he had to adjust. It was a really good save. The difference with him and old, as Remy likes to call him, old chocolate wrists, Craig Gordon, you know, he got a strong hand on it. So, yeah, he's been it was a decent save. I didn't think it was a wonder save, but that's more his bag, isn't it? Has he had any real wonder saves this season? But he's made some good saves, right? And that's certainly an upgrade on what we had. Physical presence as well. He's, you know, getting back to the size and all that, he's much, much bigger than Bain. His distribution seems to have improved a little bit, but it's, again, not ideal. Apparently, we're looking at the Bodo Glimt goalkeeper. And I saw one of those stats bomb, you know, Wheel of Death things, you know, where they put all the stats up and the Bodo Glimt keeper seems to have had a better season than Hart. He's much younger. So I can't actually remember. Can either of you remember what he was like in the games against them? He didn't stand out to me.
I think he was suspended for the second one. I'm a bit surprised that he's not given that save a bit more credit, to be honest with you. I thought that was a cracking save.
That's
a save that pretty much guarantees us a leak, unless something goes dramatically wrong in the next couple of weeks. You know, to have lost this game 2-1 would have been a disaster. That's what he's there for. And also, given the way that it came at him, and I'm thinking it was Arfield. I might be wrong, because Arfield didn't really do much in the game at all, other than falling on his backside when McGregor was chasing him in the first half. But it just a touch and through and just instinctive to block it out. And then when right after that, Jack just hits it. He hits it straight into him, and he collects it and he calms it all down. I think that that's good quality goalkeeping. And we saw the consequence. I know having good quality goalkeeping last season. At 35 years of age, he's got a couple of years left in him, I think. You know, and I think certainly at our level, maybe not the upper end of Europe and things like that, I think we could do a lot worse than keep him for a few more seasons. If this guy's available, is he a Russian internationalist? For Bodo Glimt, and he's as cheap as people are saying, £500,000, because he's got a contract at Christmas. It's definitely something to look for, but I wouldn't be saying this guy would automatically walk into that team, because I think there's a lot of stuff in terms of the stats that you don't see with Joe Hart, his presence in terms of the dressing room. And we started to talk about this at the start of the podcast, but in terms of the leadership qualities that he gives, and I know a lot of the guys, the huddle breakdown guys, were sort of poo-pooing some of this sort of stuff when we were talking about Scott Brown last year, that there's more than just the physical impact on the pitch. I think there's something about the way the reassurance he gives others, the way he speaks to them before the game, during the game, after the game, the way he talks to referees. His presence can affect a game in more than just what he physically does. I don't know, did you listen to the Bertone podcast there at the start? Did you listen to his interview in the Stiffs podcast?
I've heard all about it. I meant to listen to it, but I haven't heard it.
It's very good. I'll send it to you. I'd recommend if folk haven't listened to it, in the Stiffs podcast. There's two parts. It's quite long. It's about 2.5 hours, one of them. Episode, I think it's 13 and... 12 and 13, 13 and 14, something like that. And he talks about his early time as a player coming through the ranks. And then he talks about the struggles he's had over the last couple of seasons. And, you know, I need to take my hat after the guy. He's certainly changed my opinion of him 110%. I think he needs to shave his hair. I think he's fooling nobody with that really thin haircut. But I think moving forward, I definitely think...
Accept the baldness, don't you think, Lawrence? He needs to accept the baldness.
Oh, why are you asking me? just, by the way, I've now watched that Hart save about five or six times while he's been talking. I think it was Arfield. I said, I could say Fraser Foster-esque, I would say.
Which, do you not think sometimes when you're at a game, a save in the moment of the game when it's all instant, when you then watch the highlights of it because you know it's coming, I sometimes think with saves you think, no, it's not as great as I thought it was at the game. But that's just sometimes because it's the moment of when it was in the game as much as anything else that makes it a great save.
Do you know, I also think it's slightly different for you, Harry, but generally speaking, we don't have any respect for goalkeepers. because goalkeepers are the ones that couldn't play outfield. And particularly Celtic fans, we just want to see guys score goals. You know, just stick anybody. We need 11 players, so stick somebody in the goal. You know, and that's always been the culture, with the exception maybe since about 2005 on, is when we started to take the goalkeeping position seriously. And I think we've still got a bit of that hereditary memory. We think, you're only on the park, son, because you can't play anywhere else. You know, and so when somebody does pull off a save line, we appreciate it, but we don't appreciate it as much as somebody scoring a goal.
I just measure all Celtic goalkeepers against Fraser Forster. I just think he's as good as we've ever had. I've always liked Evan Williams. I had a thing for Evan Williams when I was a wee boy. I just used to think, I don't know what it was. He wasn't an especially good goalkeeper, I don't think, but I don't know, he just seemed to have a bit of charisma.
Do you know what, Lawrence? You're going to love the next World Cup that we're going to do on the Celtic Rumours Twitter account, because it's the World Cup of Celtic goalies from the past 60 odd years that we're going to be running.
That's phenomenal.
From roughly 1960 right on to modern day, all the way through to
the second. Who wins the final between Boric and Forster?
Simpson.
Oh, for goodness. No. Who wins the final between Boric and Forster, since they're the best two goalkeepers?
Tell me a list of line, isn't he going to get into the last four?
He should be.
I'm getting the last four. Simpson will get into the last four.
Right.
Evan Williams.
Right. Okay.
Sorry. Go on.
How many? So this is the problem of doing something that's as far back as that. How many Celtic fans who are on Twitter and voting saw Simpson play?
A dead simple answer. Who cares? Oh. That's not what it's about. I don't care. I'm not doing it for anybody else's entertainment except my own. Doesn't matter.
So just cut to the chase and have the semi-finals then of Simpson, Samaras, Boric and Forster. Celtic underground.
But Eddie's like the NBA without all the kind of prelims. And all, how's he going to make all the money? You know, he has to have all these prelims so he can get the TV money and the digital rights and all that.
Somebody's making all this cash somewhere. I just can't wait for my check to arrive one of these days. I'm going to be worth a fortune.
Well. Elon Musk needs your content, Eddie, so keep it up.
So in summary, we are pretty much there. You know, there's a guy I'm friendly with, Des, who's probably listening to this, who continually talks about he'd resigned himself up until from the disaster of last season up until and then through the last second appointment of Ange through until October, he'd resigned himself to this is a season where we finish second. It was all about how close we could finish to Rangers. So to start from that perspective, for us to now be one win from the titles, just amazing. It's just fantastic to be there. So are you looking forward to Champions League football, Lawrence?
Well, as long as we get another left-sided centre-half, it's been a... Do you know what? We're there, right? We're almost there, right? So there's that, but it's just in the way that, you know, we found Ange. Like, what a figurehead, you know? It's just a personality, obviously a brilliant football coach, but just the stuff, and Eddie, I know you'll appreciate this, you know, because you and I kind of like all this kind of growth mindset and development and all, we're kind of interested in that. And it's just a guy who seems, you know, if you're a punter just watching, and I don't say this in any kind of condescending way, if you're just watching, you think, well, he's a really good football manager. But if you look beyond that, it's just these, you know, I sign people, I don't sign players, all that stuff is, it's a different, brings a different layer to the whole thing. So there's that. So we've got a great manager who's seems to be like a great person with great ideas. Really, we go on all the time about, you know, we need a new modern structure. Well, guess what? We've right now, at least we've found ourselves a new modern manager who thinks, I'm not saying he's as good as, you know, the Guardiolas and all that. Obviously not. Hasn't achieved anywhere near what they've achieved or probably will achieve. But he thinks in the same kind of ways. You know, you kind of fret about sports science and data and all that. I'm sure Ange has got, you know, he might not have the resources to go all the way that, say, a club like Liverpool has, but he's thinking about it. I know that he's thinking about it. I know that he's trying to do something about it. I know that he's using it. So there's all that side of things. But, yeah, to come from the absolute catastrophe of last year Because my line was with my Rangers supporting pals, I would say, well, we're like Olympiakos in Greece and you're Panathinaikos. You know, Olympiakos, I think, have won 16 in the last 19 league championships. You know, and I see last year's aberration is that's Panathinaikos' one season. We hopefully we'll go on and win the next six or seven, and the fans hangs around and does what he does. I think we could do that. But this is the first one, and I think it's, you know, as long as we, you know, take advantage now and drive home the kind of financial, the marketing advantage, you know, just the fact that we're an ongoing business with good, solid people in charge. I mean, there's all of that, but in the strictly football sense, it's, I cannot wait. Even I am not going to sit down and watch all these, the next three games, and I'm not going to have my fingers over my eyes or cowering behind the couch. It's been a brilliant season. Absolutely brilliant scene. And partly it's well because I'm rambling on here, but we started off so badly. So there's been a bit of a narrative structure. You know, it's like a little bit of a novel, you know. Came in, act one, oh, new and interesting. Act two, oh my God. Act three, redemption, and here we are. There you go.
Eddie, you looking forward to, I mean, this summer's getting automatic Champions League qualification just transforms everything, does it? It means you can have a proper pre-season, the players can have a proper break. There's no World Cup. The World Cup's in the winter break. So there's no World Cup this summer. There's no Euros this summer. There's a proper break between the end of our season and the start of the next season. And it also then makes it, hopefully, so much easier for us to sign players, because we're not going to have to do that thing of signing people the last week in August because we don't know whether we've got European football or not. We are offering champion. I mean, unless Villarreal win the Champions League and peace breaks out in Ukraine and Putin apologises, we are getting Champions League football next season. So, looking forward to it, Eddie?
We need to get at least 3 points through the next three games before we can start to look forward to it properly, right? And yes, we will, right? I know we will, but let's just name that first. We get 3 points and our goal difference would be sufficient. All being well, we'll get those against Hearts and then we can start to plan ahead. As Lauren says, the group stage, the competition will make a huge difference to us, bypassing the qualifiers, because the stress and the anxiety of the qualifiers is overwhelming. You can see it in the players' faces. In fact, it probably summed up what happened in the final 10 minutes of this game today. The level of anxiety that was evident in terms of no wanting to lose that goal, I think, was what caused us an awful lot of our problems in terms of the messing about at the back that was going on. So if we can avoid that, perhaps we can go into these games not expecting it to be fantastic. I think that would be naive, because we're still a work in progress. But certainly we could maybe give it a go. I mean, Ange's apparently says that he's the awards night tonight. He's making statements about wanting to make how did he put it? I just got it sent to me there. Have us playing at a level the whole of Europe will be talking about us. I want to be ambitious like that, and I think what Lawrence was saying there, we've got the right man in charge, and we want to try and give him the biggest platform possible to put his ideas into practice. When he first came in, when we started the first talk about it, nobody really knew anything about him, and remember we did the Sunday Spaces for a couple of weeks until it all started to get a wee bit fraught. And we were talking about him, and was he going to do it? Was he going to be the right man? Was he not going to be the right man? And having read his book, There was a couple of folk that spoke about his what he was talking about in terms of leadership and management as an almost sort of David Brent type of quality, and I think that was just wanting to do him down. But I think, as Lauren says, that there's a guy who thinks deeply about a number of different things, is a genuine leader, not just a manager, not just a football man. You know, that there's much more to him. He's got much more substance than that. And we're all, you want to talk up your manager, everybody does, but there's something of the Klopp's about him. There's something, you know, that he's a figurehead, and I think if we provide him with what he needs, I think the next two or three years could be really quite exciting for Celtic. I do think we need better quality in quite a few places in the team to try and make an impact. I think we've probably got two decent strikers, but we need a real look at the defence. We need a look at our attacking midfield. I don't see Jota staying. The talk seems to be that he's not, so we're going to need an option there at least. I'd like to see Cameron Carter-Vickers stay on. I would hope that if we've got group stage football, this will be an incentive for them to stay and an incentive for others to come and join us in a way that perhaps we don't get the benefit of. Normally, in terms of the transfer window, I don't want us to be waiting until the last minute to see whether we get group stage football and then we frantically try and bring players in, the classic Lawwell approach. I want us to have that all bedded in nice and early. Players know they're coming, players get a full pre-season under the belt, and then we can start to go forward. I think we do need a bigger squad, because I think the type of football that Ange wants to play does require squad rotation.
Yeah, that's true.
And does require, you know, if we're going to be playing the we never stop type of football, then there needs to be guys that are of an equal calibre, a player that can just slot into places. And I think Rogic and O'Reilly are probably good examples of that. But we need that across the team, and we can't have Cameron Carter-Vickers having to play every single game and expect them to be able to perform at the same standard in every single match. We need two guys of comparable ability that can slot into these positions and rest them and put them on the bench. And if we're going to be playing in Champions League, we're definitely going to need that, because they're going to be under a huge amount of pressure. So if we do this, I'd be hoping that we see quite a few players brought in rather than two or three. We only need a couple of players to make an impact. I don't think that's going to work next season. I think we need another full squad, but we certainly need a lot more options than we've got at the moment. We can't go through a full season like this just with the same 11, 12, 13 players that we've had this season. So a lot of work to be done, but exciting times.
Just see on squad thing there. Just as you're talking, suddenly thought of Sorrow, who last season it was all chat about we need to play him in front of Brown, and he can't even make the bench anymore.
Desperate times requiring desperate measures. You know, I mean, look, the solution to why we were only winning the league last season was Sorrow and Turnbull, but we're a long way away for that now. You know, that there was just so many things just didn't go for us last season that just didn't work. If it could go wrong, it did go wrong, and maybe it was just fated that it wasn't going to happen. But I think the pressure of 10 in a row just was too much last season for us to get out for under. The lack of fans in the stadium, the mismanagement in terms of COVID and Dubai didn't help. The transparency in terms of COVID that perhaps cost us in a way that other clubs perhaps weren't as transparent and didn't cost them. There was lots of reasons why last season didn't work, but it's hardly surprising that we were starting to clutch at straws like Sorrow last season, but as you say, nowhere near the squad now.
Here, Harry, just talking about next season, I'd like when you talk about this, is Villarreal. I mean, semi-finals of the Champions League. I mean, I'm not saying we could, but we should be ambitious. I mean, I'm just looking here, the figures, Villarreal's turnover, 2020-21, €123 million. I mean, are we far off that? I mean, I don't, you probably have those figures to hand.
No, if we play Champions League football, if we were playing Champions League football to where they are, we would be close to or there or thereabouts at that level of revenue. So,
my point being is, exactly. Let's be ambitious. If Villarreal can do it, why can't we?
If a team on the other side of Glasgow who have a lunatic making their statements that the chief executive doesn't even know that is made, if they can get to a European semi-final, so can we.
Yeah. Anyway. That's for all the people who are saying, look at these three numpties talking about, you know, going far in the Champions League. Well, it's eminently possible. Villarreal can do it with their resources. We can certainly do it with our resources. That was my point.
You said three numpties. I never said we'd go far in the Champions League. Used to said we'd go far in the Champions League. I think we'll get knocked for six left, right, and centre across the Champions League. And I'm just thinking money. That's what I'm worried about. Maybe in a couple of years' time. Them getting to the semi-final, I have no idea how they've managed that. That's astounding. How do they beat Dortmund the way they beat Dortmund? I just kind of get my head around that. Let's call a spade a spade. The way they started against Braga in that home tie is amazing. I've no idea how that's working, because see what we've said, you know, this is a team that's in the semi final. They're rotten. Like, they are absolutely rotten.
We spent the whole
hour
they're a decent team.
Listen, we've tried to be polite about them to this point, and we've hopefully bored them and they're all away again. They are. How are they doing that? That is unbelievable. that they've got to. So, if they can do it, we can do it. But by God, we need a hell of a lot of luck to do it.
Yeah.
Anyway, the next game's against Hearts. Lons, very, very quickly, what's the score prediction for the home game next Saturday against Hearts?
Well, I'll go to very quickly. Okay, 2-0. Although, yeah, they don't like us. They might try, but I think you've got their eyes on the Scottish Cup final. So, 2-0 should be pretty comfortable. I'm really looking forward to seeing that, actually. Because that's just kind of got the big stress point out of the way. So we should be a bit more relaxed than in the last three games.
Eddie Lawrence makes a point there. Stress point. That was the other thing I thought in the last 10 minutes of the game. I think as fans we can forget. How much pressure is on a group of players who, the vast majority of whom, have never been going for something like this before?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the team of experience of it, and Tom Rogic said in an interview a couple of weeks back, you know, we've done this 9 out of the last 10 times. But you look at that team today, what have we got? 3 players started the game that were here last season, one of whom, Tony Ralston, wasn't really here for most of last season or the season before, you know, so as a new team. And we do just want to get that finishing line. Hearts are missing their 2 centre-halves. They drew nothing each yesterday. I think they played a fairly inexperienced team, whether he's going to try and watch these guys in anticipation of the final. But you're right, they do like to beat us. It would be very nice to put a few goals by them. I'll take 1-0 right now if you offer me it, just to get the 3 points and get it done and dusted. I think we should win it fairly comfortably. I'll say 3-1, but I'll take 1-0 if you're offering me just now. My biggest concern, if I was a Heart supporter, would be what I'm going to sit on when I go to the away support section of the ground, given that half of the seats appear to have been thrown into the family stand at the end of the game today. So hopefully the Celtic guys will be able to work some sort of magic to allow people to be able to sit down at that game.
Well, also quite a change actually with the PR of the new Rangers compared to the old one, because the other thing is they made a statement saying they are going to be reporting, now it must be their own fans, they're going to be reporting their own fans for hate crime chanting at the game. So quite a move on there.
I think I got that all wrong somehow.
I'm blaming the Celtic board for that. We should have sent them a message. Send us only your finest fans.
I also
didn't get the memo.
I think they might have. There's the question. Do we keep going with a 700 in each ground?
Or does the events of
the end of this game sort of show just scrub the whole thing and just have it home fans only? What do you think?
I would have it home fans only. It's more hassle than it's worth. It's, again, I sound very childish. They started it, you know, and I think they're desperate to end it because they need, again, as they showed the last time. So, no, don't give them what they want. I wouldn't send anybody. I would just leave it like this or leave it with home fans for time immemorial. I had enough of it.
The first Glasgow derby of next season will be at Celtic Park. So we will be the ones who have to make a decision on that.
For me, obviously, I'm biased because I'm sitting in that family stand, and it means that if we don't give them any more than those 700, I can get to that game because of the way the tickets work. But Harry, I know you go to the away games. You've obviously got your contacts for getting your tickets, but you've been to Ibrox when it was a Broomhound. You know, there is a factor there that a lot of guys like to go to those games, and I'm denying them the opportunity if we cut this back. But based on what we saw there at the end of the game, They didn't contribute anything to the atmosphere. The atmosphere in the midweek game was 10 times better than anything we saw today. And it all just kicked off. And if the boys are going to be sitting anywhere near that section, that's just an accident waiting to happen.
Lawrence, you want to notice this. So there's the boys who are the... They were getting moved to their own section, I saw online. I don't think it's a great... We've moved the boys right next to where the away support is. I think I can't comprehend how anybody at Celtic think that's a great idea. And then there was trouble after the game, apparently. Yeah. I thought I'm bouncing around like Zebedee nonsense.
Well, firstly, nobody gets the cultural reference Zebedee, Harry. So you need to cut that out for a start.
The 1980s casuals get it though. That's
But do you know what? Nobody listening to this podcast is.
I know at this stage. Yeah,
exactly. Listening to this podcast, we're fine.
They get the concept of. I mean, it was just to be honest. The people who are walking down Springfield Road with me are my age or older, or walking along with young kids. It's not, I mean, get a life.
By the way, you know what we never spoke about? See the amount of police at the start of the game?
That is enormous.
I can't tell you the last time I've seen so many police at a game, and then the whole section closed off so that they get into the stadium, and they were keeping them back at the end of the game. But there was police everywhere. That's the most police I've seen at a game, and I don't know how long. And there was only 700 of them as well. You know, I'd quite taken aback, to be honest with you. But obviously, it was needed because it all kicked off at the end. But it just shows that no matter how many police you've got in there, if Fort Wanty caused trouble, the trouble will be caused. They never managed to stop it happening.
The other thing is, if people could tweet and let me know, what's the difference? Because so there's guys with black hats, yellow hats, or, police, yellow hats, orange hats, a red hat. I saw one guy with a red hat, and I saw two guys with green hats. Baseball
white hats as well. White hats. I'm assuming they were the goodies. Yeah, the wee baseball caps, all different colours. Yeah, we were wondering that one as well. That was certainly an interesting talking point in our book.
If someone could send us a message, what are all the various coloured police hats, baseball caps?
Never mind the game or anything like that. All we're interested in is, where were they wearing those hats from?
Anyway, that's just by the by. So, yeah, the boys have been moved to another corner. I think, I don't know whether that's permanent or whether it was just a temporary measure. So that'd be really smart to be next to the Hearts fans as well. That'll be another good one to stick them next to. Yeah. Anyway, enough of this nonsense. Eddie, Lawrence, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on, Harry.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
There you go. I hope you enjoyed that bit. If you wonder why the audio jumps a wee bit at the bit where we're talking about the boys, there was a wee bit. I took a bit out. We ramble on about at the end of the St Johnson game. I was going down Springfield Road, and there's a group of about 15. 20 guys and maybe 20, 25 guys and stuff. All very silly. Anyway, I edited that out because it just goes nowhere. Me talking about people jumping about like Zebedee and Jesus and a cross and a mixture between the two. Anyway, enough of that. This is me, Harry Brady. We are 1-1 from the title.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter. All the while, in this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring